recording and start.
Should I close the door first?
Well, go ahead.
This is a meeting of the Senate members of the Joint Special Committee on Professional Responsibility. The meeting is at 12:30 in room 409 on Wednesday, June 20th, 1973. The committee will be discussing the following. Senate Bill 871 relating to publications. House Bill 2529 relating to conflict of interest. House Bill 2157 relating to public disclosure by public bodies of public matters. Okay, this is side 14, tape 1.
That I know. Where?
Grattan, did the other bill come back?
It's supposedly on its way up from legislative council. So the girl said she'd bring it up as soon as it was ready.
Yeah, Kathy was out.
They were typing the thing at that time?
Everybody was gone.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll get it out.
Okay, this is the letter we have. We have Senate Bill 871 back to us before we turned it into the desk by...
You mean 2157?
Is it 2157? Is that it? Oh, okay.
They're supposedly will be here, but they haven't come up yet. I read I went to ask them at 12:30.
2157. Let's see. Anyway, we adopted some amendments to brief everybody, and I think most of you know. And before I turned it into the desk, Mr. Johnson got a hold of me and said that there was some conflict. So as soon as I can find the bill, you can go ahead. Okay. Would it be in the out section? I suppose that's where it is.
House bills reported out.
That's where it is. Okay.
House bills reported out. I don't find it.
We have, and how does the conflict bill, is that, when is the House, were they going, did they have it today?
They passed both of them in our reports passed today.
Both of them, so we can start work on them tomorrow then. Or, I mean, as soon as we get them. Or before we get them, but.
Well, they'll vote on the majority report, the committee report tomorrow, so.
They vote on it tomorrow.
They will vote on that tomorrow. But we've got their copies of all.
Okay, they haven't got it out yet, so we won't have it. 871.
Oh,
okay. Right. But I would.
Can we meet tomorrow?
We're having such short time, and we have. I don't really want to go to evenings because we're already meeting Ways and Means every evening.
Do you need to go?
Yeah, and so I would kind of like to try.
This afternoon.
With sessions, you know, whatever they do, but if possible. And see what you people think at 12:30. If we could meet every day until we kind of straighten these things up, because we're such a short amount of time to work on them, and to try to get them finished. And I'd like to have them out before we get caught up in a last day, 2 or 3 day rush, because there might not be some things that we if we do amend them or anything. We'd still have the conference to go through. And And I can't see any other way, because we don't have any scheduled time, unless we just do it. So if that's all right with everybody, I want to make sure we'll just go ahead and meet at noon every day. And I don't know where. I went to the wrong place today. Is this place available every noon, I wonder? Well, you can't tell, though. They're all going to be in the same problem. Okay, we'll start in there, then. Mr. Johnson.
Chairman. The amendment, and I'm sorry, I had not had a chance to see the amendment that adopted rejected by the Labor Commissioner. I have an alternate set of amendments. The amendment is in the form you adopted. I think just frankly opens the bill wide open, and because it was never our intent, for example, for litigation exception. Apply to administrative proceedings, because you can say anything that's a proceeding, administrative proceeding. And to attempt to try to bring administrative agencies under the definition of law enforcement agency, I think is not the proper course. I read, of course, have some reservations as to why the Bureau of Labor feels they need this exception. These amendments that we offer would accomplish the same thing, what they want to accomplish, you'd make all their records and their investigations confidential without including everybody else. And you can go either way. The reason I really only think the bill needed the amendment is the information, most of the information they get is gotten under the, would be given to them in confidence, and consequently is subject to the qualified section 11 anyway. But if you want to give them that exemption, I would much prefer this Alderman amendment than the one you adopted. I think the one you adopted is frankly emasculated right. The bill.
But this will keep the... Right, but I think their problem was that they did some investigation, which was a lot of it was hearsay and what have you, that they wrote down to try to determine whether they were going to have what they were going to do, and they didn't feel that at least it was my understanding that you wanted this to be used against you when you were just investigating and you were just trying to get a picture, and that's my understanding.
Right.
Anyway, and this they didn't feel if somebody used this you might be
voluntary basis. And where it's being on a voluntary basis, it's given, and you know, the person requested be kept confidential. It has qualified privilege now, the way the bill is drawn. Under Section 11 in the bill.
But I could kind of understand this would not hold up in a court of law, and it isn't. Usually, if you're going to get a full investigation report, they've kind of got to give the guy that's doing it a lot of leeway and just saying what impressions were and what he thought and what people said. And I can. What do you think about this, Wally? You're the attorney.
Oh, I'll follow Attorney General's lead. I haven't given it much thought, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But he studied it.
Yeah. Well,
I'll show you what I'm getting at. It's fine and darn.
But this will answer what you think is their problem.
Well, this would certainly answer their problem. This would take care of their proceedings, would make them totally
okay.
Confidential. It probably is the least controversial right. Way to go.
I would then entertain a motion to rescind the amendment that we adopted from the Department of Labor.
So moved.
Okay. It's been moved. All those in favor will answer aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. And if this will answer it, well, we'll go ahead and adopt this, and then we can get this bill out.
I'm sorry, I'm not in a position to say that. I try to get a hold
right.
Of
this won't do violence.
I'll get a hold of this afternoon, but I'm sure they will.
Okay, and this won't do violence to the bill?
No.
All right, then we'll entertain a motion to adopt, unless there's further comments. Excuse me, is there more comments?
Move to rescind the bill out, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Have we adopted the amendment?
Adopt the amendment and send
the
bill out. No, we haven't. We just rescinded the other one, so now we need to adopt this one.
I move that we adopt the Attorney General's amendment then.
And send the bill?
And then send the bill out to the pass.
All right. You've all heard the motion. Those in favor will answer aye. Although, let's see, is there anybody opposed? Okay. All right, that will be done then. And that takes care of it. We don't have the other bill before us, which we had hoped to have, but we'll have it here by tomorrow.
Chairman, can I ask who is going to carry the bill when it's all glad to send it off?
Tom hasn't had a bill on the floor for quite a while. Do you suppose that he would like to carry this?
Do a good job.
I'm just trying to spread it around
yeah,
so everybody gets a fair show. Okay,
yep.
If not, we'll sign it for Tom. Because
You
just walked in time, Tom. We're going to give you $21.57.
Oh, yeah. What I get for being
that's right.
Well, he hasn't had anything but those darn agricultural bills. Give him something with some meat in it. Okay, that's all right. Then we'll.
I brought you the. You have copies of the majority and the minority reports on the 25-29,
yeah.
which is
the closest to that we adopted.
Which one was adopted?
They adopted both the minority reports this morning. the...
Adopted both of them?
Both of them. They're cumulative.
Oh, okay.
So they adopted one and the other, and so you now have four points that would be included in what they're going to vote on tomorrow.
Well, let me ask, how does that differ from the one we passed out to them?
Okay, the first report outlawed fundraising for political fundraising during the session. That was stood all by itself. The other minority report included inclusion of a confidential copy of your state and federal income tax return, listed income by categories. By dollar amounts, 500 to 1,000, 1,005, 5 to 10, 10 to 25, and the third one was elected county officials, including them in coverage of the bill.
Could we have a copy tomorrow when we you get this other one, start first work on that?
Yeah,
we'll know pretty well what they are.
Have it marked.
Could we have a copy of ours plus theirs and
right.
Cut out the differences and set them on ours so that we can go over it. Because I thought we had them pretty darn good.
Okay, so did you want to just take
not the... But I just want to see what they are so we can compare, because we probably want to accept some of theirs and accept some of ours.
All right, so that would give you, put one back, together, identifying which is theirs and which is yours, or rather bring back...
Well, did they accept ours pretty much and then add these?
They added these on top of it, so you've got an amalgam. Why don't I bring you... You've got copies of what you sent out in your file. We can just sit them down side by side and work through section by section. I can point out what was changed.
All right, that'll be good.
That'd probably be easiest.
But the quickest way, so we don't have to...
Yeah, that'd be the easiest, so we don't have to read it line by line.
And...
then we can point out what was taken out and what was put back in.
All right. So tomorrow we'll start in on this, and I hope we have that other one, which I wouldn't think
be.
That we would have too much to worry about putting it out, because we just...
Well, wait a minute. Now, one of these...
Mr. Chairman, on 851...
This one is much like the adopted.
Yeah. That one's, is... What they have is...
Well, I'll probably just wait and see, but this is very much... Looks like pretty much like
very similar. What they have is a basic bill, which is particularly similar to the one that was reported out by the Senate. I mean, the one that you
worked on.
And with some changes. And we can identify those. Then you have two other progressions on top of that. One is a minority report number one, then minority report number three. So you've got three progressions away from what we worked on the Senate side.
And tomorrow we ought to know just what they have done finally.
Right, we should.
Take the bill and then show the changes like you...
Exactly. Well, I'll be able to point them out as we go down.
Then we won't...
Could I ask remind our AA that when 851 is up, he could invite Representative Ingalls to that particular... so Bob can...
Oh, 871?
871, okay.
Right. He was invited today, but apparently they're still adding over there.
They're still in session.
Well, whenever we bring that up.
Right.
And
right.
It's important.
Okay.
Okie
doke. Do it.
That'll do it.
Sorry, go ahead. This is Thursday, June 21st, room 409, tape 14, side 1, 0205. Joint Committee on Professional Responsibility, Senate Members and Representative Ingalls, discussing Senate Bill 871 and House Bill 2529.
871.
Senate Bill 871.
Minor amendment, deleting pages 358 and substantial amendments on page 2.
I'm wondering about 7. Printing industry could supply their own. We could probably get this by without any funding.
I move we delete Section 3.
Well, you do say, it does say, that
employee wants to...
Yes, subsection 2, section 2, bottom of page 2. The task force may employ one staff person to assist the task force in performance of duties, and such clerical personnel may be required therefore. You want to strike that too?
Let's change that, instead of to employ, let's say the legislative task force can provide the services of one staff person.
Right.
Not fiscal, wait, for the legislative
administration.
Yeah, it'd be better.
Shall provide. May.
Provide such clerical assistance as may be required. All right, I'll move that, change, and then delete section 3 is my motion.
Senator Carson, do you wish to amend section?
Subsection 2 of section 2.
Yeah, subsection 2 of section 2.
Will read legislative administration may employ, may provide such clerical personnel as may be required therefore. Okay.
And then to delete section 3 and to send the bill to the Senate for due pass recommendation.
Aye.
Make a special point to check this out.
I'll try to get a copy of that. Thank you, Mr. Randall, to see me second minister for safety.
Do we have...
Get it in this afternoon.
Do we have officially had 2529 yet?
No, not received. It has not been received yet.
We're going to have a suspension of the rules to get it, but I think, have you talked to Jason about that?
We should have it.
It should come through normally this afternoon anyway.
Was it reading the afternoon?
2529 has been, no, it's the afternoon.
See, it's got to have two readings.
It's got to have two readings.
We've got to suspend the rules.
Right, the reading today. Maybe it'll be in for this. I'll find out from Cecil, maybe you can just get it read the first time today.
Well, maybe you get it read twice and sent to committee. Requires suspension.
Yeah, we go ahead and work on it. We have got it here by Saturday.
Yeah. Move it out Saturday. Get it on the desk on Saturday.
Yeah.
So it'll be read Monday.
Yes, why don't you just leave those in your books, and I've got others copies there. So to show you the difference, the first one is, this is what the Senate side of the committee gave to the House. This is what the House passed. So that if you lay those side by side, we can go right through.
Majority
report, right.
The House passed the majority report?
They passed that and the other amendments.
Minority
reports also. But I've got them marked in here where they go.
That's part of the
majority report. Right. They're not actually printed, but I've got notations where they go.
So what are the differences?
Okay. None on page 1. Page 2, what you have is a majority report. And down in paragraph C, we have, as the Senate had it, it said the conflict of interest does not mean the appointment of no more than one member of his household by a member of the legislative assembly. The House changed that to read, the appointment by the legislative assembly or any member thereof, from funds paid for part or in whole by the state, of one person who is either a descendant or ascendant, brother, sister, aunt, nephew, niece, spouse, partner, employer, or employee of a member of the legislative assembly.
Ooh.
They would allow part of the member of the household.
Well, now, wait a minute. you say that you went a lot further. This is an exemption, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's an exemption, right.
What they're saying is that you can have all your family working in the state.
You can have one of those persons. Conflict of interest does not mean one of those people.
Oh, no, Mr. Chairman, you mean if you happen to have an uncle working for the highway division and an aunt on the other side of your family working for the PUC in some other part, all of a sudden you're in violation of this?
No. It says, however, up here on the definition of conflict of interest, subsection 6, however, conflict of interest does not mean, paragraph C, the employment by the legislative assembly. One of those persons, they wanted to make it broader than just a member of household.
Well, what they're doing is extending the area of nepotism is what they're doing.
Yeah, the net result would be.
Yeah.
No. Actually, that would narrow it. They actually would narrow it, in effect, because as it was written by the Senate, it would say no member of household, and we define member of household as the spouse and any children. So that under the definition as the Senate members finished it, the bill did not address your uncle, nephew, niece, etc. Didn't say anything about those people. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right. So that if you you could say, okay, Senator Ripper could employ his wife, but the law doesn't address his employer or his employees or his uncle, aunt, nephews. It means so that he could have his wife work in his office, then you could have his niece and Senator Hartung could have his uncle, and none of those things would be in violation of the Senate did the bill. This would make it the employment by the legislative assembly or any member thereof. Is that clear? Okay. Two. They extended.
I know what they're trying to get at. I remain convinced. I think they've gone the other way. Because this is an exemption to what constitutes a conflict of interest. What we're saying is no nepotism, except we allow one bit of nepotism, and that has to be a spouse or the child. And now we're saying we allow some nepotism, but it can be all these different people. This exception is written in here so legislators can know their why. And I move to take it out and fail and have no member of the family.
You are correct in that.
So they've just blown off a whole... we can come back to that. I don't think that's what they intended to do, but I think that's what they wound up to.
I'm sure you're correct. they were saying, in the discussion on this, they were saying that list all those people so they can only get one of those persons. Is their intent?
Well, I think what the problem has been is that we might want to state that as affirmatively and get it out from under what does not constitute a conflict of interest.
That's right. That would be correct. Okay. The second question would have been on a member of household, to my mind, means the spouse of a public official and any children of either who reside with a public official.
Any child of either?
Well, all of them children of their previous marriage. As it was originally read, it means the spouse, the person, and the children.
But either refers to two people, and all you're saying here is a member of households means the spouse. Oh, I see what you're doing. Okay.
Well,
why don't we...
Right, it still says, and any children of either who reside with the public official.
Well... Well, apparently the stepchildren is what they're trying to pick up.
Stepchildren was more than anything else that they were saying.
Well, there are quite a few.
The next one is on this question of subsection 10, the public official. That is where Minority Report number one came in. It included elected county officials in the definition. Well, I haven't got it written in there, but it's that's where it would go in the finished bill.
How strong are they in that?
That passed, that one was 30 to 26.
No, I mean the committee.
Or the committee. They had quite an argument over it. They on the expected lines of do we want to have them in now or do we want to pick them up later? And it was unresolved.
The county surveyor in Marion County would be required to file this with the state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Down here, we've got three in the margin. They've added state agency, then department and division heads. It wasn't clear. They just picked that up.
I thought we did. We didn't do it very well.
I think it was actually left out of the bill.
Okay.
Number four, they included in addition to official salary and personal expenses in honoraria as a legitimate income for a public official as part of this result of this position.
In other words, you can have
other than
an honoraria.
You can accept an honoraria. Now, in five, there is a major change in section five. Originally,
I'm all right on that one. Let's move on.
Originally, this was section four in the Senate bill. It said, no legislative employee shall accept assignment to or be employed by a legislative committee, the jurisdiction of which consists of matters in which he or a member of his household or business which he or a member of his household is associated as a conflict of interest. They rewrote it substantially to match three of the majority report here to say no legislative employee shall use his official position or office to obtain financial gain from himself other than official salary, honorary, or reimbursement of expenses. The problem being that if how do you identify someone to ever know what is going to come before that committee when it's out of his control? Then they put an amendment, the underlined, underscored, last sentence, no legislative employee shall receive salary from any other public agency while the legislature is in session. So if you are on a public payroll someplace else, you have to take a leave of absence. It's still accepted, but you have to take a leave of absence.
That's the proposed House rule.
That's it.
Yeah.
So-called Frank Robertson. On the top of page five, then, with Minority Report number two, this is where they plugged in one, two, three things. The first one, this is just one. I'm sorry, this is just one. This is where they said, the amendment said, you can't accept and you can't solicit money for a fundraiser.
Do we have that here somewhere?
Session. It'd be in minority report number two. It'd be their section six in that bill.
We're substituting that for this?
No, it would be in addition. Then it would be, this would be new seven. That's all. I didn't have time to put
out. Yeah, no, that's fine.
Where is this?
Do we define what a lobbyist is?
It should be in there. Section 6.
Do we define lobbyists anywhere in this area?
No.
Then how do we start off by saying no lobbyist shall? Are we presuming everybody knows what a lobbyist is?
I guess they're going to stand on the definition of 25 or 30.
Where's that one?
Well, you have to go to the Minority Report number 2 on page something. Section 6 starts off, no lobbyist shall make or offer to make.
Section
Okay, I'm sorry, I read down here, they're going to 171,755.
Oh, okay. Okay, the next one was on the bottom of that page five. Rather than saying that the name of anyone who, a candidate who fails to file, shall not be placed on the ballot, it said shall be removed from the ballot because of the time question. In fact, it'd be on the ballot by the time of 30 days or so. No time that the failure was notified. Section 7, this is minority report number 1, which would be that, 1, the public official would provide a confidential copy of his state and federal income tax returns.
Let's just take them down a little.
Yeah.
Added a legal or common description.
Legal, yeah, they changed that, legal or common descriptions on his estate.
I guess we know what common description means.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
Well, it means something other than legal. I guess that's
that was the point.
Like it's in Washington County.
Yeah, I suppose that's why we took out the legal description.
Right.
So that they could give a lot and block number. And
they were afraid that as it read, it would say
Washington County. Okay.
Yeah, that was their problem. In addition, they struck the words any interest, direct or indirect, and substituted any ownership interest, so that someone who's acting as a straw man wouldn't have to list all the things that he actually had an interest in during that year. Let's see. Points 8 and 9 are new. These are common cause amendments which were accepted by the House Committee.
So let me, D, 8?
That would be D and E. My number is 8 and 9.
Yeah, all right, D, name.
C. That's included in, and there would be a new C. That would be included in the
minority. We agreed to that, though, didn't we?
C?
C, yeah, we agreed to that. Let's show here. Well, no, I thought we agreed to that.
We said the general fund will be the source of any income, whether or not taxes are received by him or a member of this household during the preceding year.
Well, in excess of 500. However, the minority report had these points. In addition to the income tax form, you also have to give categories of income.
Yeah.
The categories being 500 to 1,000.
We've got to go, Mr. Chairman. I've talked to several people about it.
We do.
Yeah. I'd like to have Grandin, if he would. I'll object to filing the income tax and resting it on the confidentiality aspect unless we bring in the sanctions for an employee that discloses that, similar to what we have in the Department of Revenue. Well, I'm ambivalent. I can go either way, but I'm not going to subject 3,000 people to somebody publishing the tax reports because there's no sanctions in the bill for, it says they're confidential, but there are no sanctions that I can find. Well, this question I ask is if I give it my income tax statement over to you and you say it's going to be confidential and you violate that, I don't know what I'm going to do about that. I won't like you anymore, but that's about all I can do.
All right, we've got to get down. We've just got blazes from here.
What are we going to do it again tomorrow? Same time, same station?
My neighbor subscribes and she brings them down.
Do you want a couple of buttons? Those two loyal legislators? What see the heart of that? What happens when it is that? 25:30. Suspension of the rules. Hold on.
Friday, June 22nd, 12:30 p.m., room 409, 814, side 1.
You preach outside.
I was talking about Lloyd Knutson.
What did he do? Is he a preacher or something?
Oh, he touches base once a year with every state.
Page 4, section 4, the underscored.
We were past that one.
You were over. You included that, that's right.
We were over to 6 or 7.
Shall we move?
That's correct.
Which one?
Page 6, section 7.
Yeah. Well, we have the legal or common description.
Okay. Where are the categories? Are those in the other?
They're in the minority report.
That was adopted.
That was adopted.
That's minority 1?
Yes, minority 1. It would be the,
I don't have minority 1, actually.
That'd be, well, just honesty.
No, sorry, sure.
Okay, minority 1 would include the income tax forms, as we discussed yesterday, the categories of income, and that would be it, those two things.
Okay, we've got to read it. What else?
We have it.
That was a house.
We have a policy decision.
Either got it.
No, I am
put in the safeguards and all the requirements and sanctions so that we don't have any agency broadcast publishing income tax.
So we strike income tax forms.
And that was not one.
All right.
Where was that? That was page.
In the minority report. I'm not sure exactly where it would be. It'd be in the last one. I don't know. Would be a new I.
Take it out. That's the bottom one.
Okay, take out new I on minority report.
No.
Jack, I think we can substitute the category breakdown in C, and I talked with both Bill and Blanche, and I think we don't need all the categories they talk about. They've got a $500 category, the difference between $500 and $1,000. And I'm trying to envision your mind, you'd have a block of everything under 500, then you have 500 to 1,000. You check that block with a name, a general source, rather.
I know what you mean.
And so I think that what I do is go make the steps in excess of 500. I think that's a pretty good figure.
Just like we had originally.
Yeah, and go clear up to 5,000.
Okay, 500 to 1,000. I mean, 500 to 5,000.
Right. In other words, anything under 500, this is the general categories, and you'd be listed by retirement payment or selling bottles or whatever it is, but not necessarily the individual clients or customers or whatever. That's in a different area. You'd list anything over 500 to 1,000, you'd list the general source category, or to 5,000. Now let's go why don't we go 5 to 15 and then above 15
and above.
Any violent objections, Bill? I wasn't originally involved with this.
I don't even understand that. Why, if you have excess of 500, why do you need all the others?
Well, what they
wanted
to do
is... Because you have everything listed.
But what the range was to do, the purpose of the range was to give the public some sort of handle on what kind of income you're getting. Not specific amounts, but at least some ideas to whether you're getting a fairly significant proportion of your income from such and such a category.
Yeah, let's suppose you had three major occupations. You taught at the land that you practiced law, and you're in the National Guard. You dislist those three sources: Willamette University, Oregon National Guard, Carson. that's all you've been required to list. Now, if this passes under these categories, you check what category each one of these fit it into.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I don't think it's necessary, but apparently this is something that Common Cause has been interested in, and apparently the House feels...
Well, if we put it in as, you know, you could do this much easier without getting involved in this and having to change it from time to time as the world changes, inflation changes, everything. As categories set by whoever this board is.
Well,
or do you think that's too?
That might work the other way. I'm trying to get the same thing you're trying to get at, and that is to get the general area disclosure. You know, if somebody gets $750 from one place and $25,000 from another, there's quite a bit of difference in disclosing it, although they both be listed. I don't think it's particularly necessary, but the House does. And I'm just trying to get categories down that aren't burdensome and that are far enough apart that you don't get caught in the problem you're talking about. It's shifting back and forth between the category and category. Well, let's try it on.
Okay. Well, you had it 1 to 5, or 5 to 5.
5 to 15, and over 15. Above.
Yeah, and then over 15 is just the last one.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. That covers just about
anything
that you'd want to know about anybody.
Now, D and E here were two that the Senate had accepted earlier from the Common Cause. F, they had changed from 2,000 to, the House changed from 2,000 to 5,000. All right.
That's a creditor one.
Right, right. There's no use finding out who knows what ought to be a
$5,000 creditor anyway before he'd be putting any pressure on you.
Right. Let's see. The next change was down on the bottom of page 7 there. They substituted subsequent for prior to on the ground that it may be difficult unless you were stood up immediately when the issue was raised, you know, on the floor, and the speaker, the president said, you know, on a third reading on such and such, you may not even get recognized to say, I have a conflict of interest on this question. And if it was a bill that had only three people speaking on it, and you didn't get recognized, and the question was called for, you'd be in violation.
Well,
so subsequent to, you can explain what you did.
Except that I saw this, well, it was graphically played. The House has graphic examples on almost any subjects, but they played it out graphically earlier this week when the question was asked to the speaker whether or not someone should declare a conflict of interest before or after. And so they went both ways. And I think there are reasons for declaring it ahead of time. But I see your point.
If
the speaker doesn't recognize you for any reason, intentional or unintentional, you just created a criminal out of one of the guys on the floor.
Right. The other question was what...
Which might be a pretty good technique, thinning out the ranks.
Well, the question was, what does prior to mean? What is prior? The thing is, it's somewhat good easily, just as easily knowing that, put out a one-page thing to the speaker saying, I have a conflict on this, and posting it.
However, it seems to me that subsequent falls for the same fault. Subsequent, 2 years later, that's subsequent. He announces, by golly, I did have a conflict on that vote, and I now announce.
That's election night after he lost his seat.
Yeah. And he announces he cleanses his soul by declaring all his public interest and therefore avoids the review. I think it really has to be
prior
to casting his ballot. And that's going to require a change in both House and Senate rules.
To allow for it,
to give at a point of personal privilege before casting my vote to explain that conflict of interest. I think there's no other choice. I think it's got to come with
no.
So let's hang tough on prior.
Okay. In each one, in Section 9, they took out the nature of the conflict. They said it used to read, will make prior to any vote, you should announce
probably prior to any vote on the issue, the nature of the conflict of interest. And they threw it out because they said, well, maybe it's not necessary. You want to put that in?
Well...
The nature of the conflict.
Seems to me that I should be in there. Or maybe we might find out what nature of the conflict.
That was their problem.
But, you know, they're, I think the public is entitled to hear, or the colleagues are entitled to hear, whether my conflict is I'm a teacher and I'm about to vote on basic school support, or I'm a legislator and I'm about to vote on a pay increase. I think the public's entitled to hear what my conflict of interest is, to judge how deep it is.
The nature of it. They took it out on top of page 8, sub 2, on judge, district attorney, because in fact that's all the case right now, that they don't have to, and very apparently frequently do not divulge the nature of the conflict.
Okay, if he removes himself from the case, then I don't think that could be his business. But the lawyers might want to ask, but I think when you go ahead and vote, as the legislators do, that I think we're entitled to know what the nature is.
Okay. 3, 4, 5, and 6 are additions to create 4 different kinds of ways of addressing a conflict. 1, sub 3 would be your statewide elected offices. They would apply to the commission for a ruling because they wouldn't have a superior, a governor, etc. and so forth. Sub 4 is the head of a state agency, Department of Vision, notify the writing, person who appointed him to office, the nature of the conflict, and request that another person be directed to handle a matter that generated conflict, so that the department heads would go back to the governor, the division heads would go to the department head, whatever. 5 is the members of state boards and commissions and notify the chairman of the board of commission, and the chairman goes to his appointing authority. 6 is employees of any of boards, and
well, that's an awful lot of saying,
right,
of doing just what we said anyway in one little short paragraph.
Yeah, but
let it go. I mean, it still doesn't say any more than what we said in the very first
just sentence. Clarifies what the lines of authority are. We do not have at this point anything to cover what a legislative employee will do when a conflict arises in this bill. We say earlier in section 4, we say no legislative employee should use his office, official position or office, to obtain financial gain. But in section 9, we don't say how they remove themselves from a conflict of interest. It would seem to me you'd have to put on sub 7 and repeat what you did for employees of boards, agencies, commissions. Wouldn't that be good? Just put that on there. Said, instead of, you say, any legislative employee shall notify in writing a supervisor of the nature of the conflict and request another person to be directed to handle the matter.
What you say, employer, board, agency,
commission, or a legislative employee.
Or a legislature.
Or
any board, agency, commission,
or the legislative assembly.
Yeah.
Okay. You say it was a paragraph. Page 9, they changed the term of office is still 4 years, but they said that no member shall be eligible to be appointed to more than one full term, but may serve out an unexpired term. That was the addition. Down at the bottom of 14, they put back furnish, section 12, sub 1, prescribed forms. Well, you took out furnish. You said... make a bank with such a form.
Well, the problem there is furnish is what you do to a house, and you don't furnish forms.
You make available. Right.
You provide them, or you make them available, or whatever.
Yeah,
you
let's put it back.
Provide.
Yeah.
And to provide, yeah, that would be...
I take it they didn't like make available, they wanted a more active role.
Right. Yeah, the same thing with the next one.
Right. All right. Down at the bottom of page 9, sub 3, upon request of any unit of local government, make available the forms and manuals described in subsections 1 and 2 of the section to such unit for use in establishing such disclosure procedures within its jurisdiction as the unit may determine. So that if the special district or school board or whatever wants to set up a disclosure procedure for themselves, they can get the forms and manuals from the state.
Yeah, that's going to change.
Doesn't say they have to set them up, it says if they choose to do so. One would presume that the school board would go to the Secretary of State.
That's a brand new section.
Yeah, right. Well, subsection, yeah. Subsection 3, yeah.
Establishing such disclosure procedures within its jurisdiction as the unit may determine are both awkward. And I don't think they had it. I'd recommend we take that out.
For use in establishing?
It's a recitation.
Yeah, just cut out, starting at 4.
Right.
So it reads upon the request of any unit of local government.
Make available
the forms and manuals prescribed, described in subsections 1 and 2 of this section to such unit.
Period.
All right. I don't know what
else would they use them for?
Or they could use it for mulch or whatever they want to do, but I suspect they would use it for the purpose of establishing.
Yeah. Down in sub 8 in my note 16, they wanted to have a signed complaint. Pagliarelli was particularly.
Number 5, before we move on, he said develop a filing, coding, cross indexing system. And we, when we're moving everything to machines, as much as we are, and to computers, are we limiting them to a file?
I think a filing can be a machine file, electronic file.
I just don't want to limit them to something that's so archaic that we...
I think that this is plenty flexible. It could be a pencil and paper or machine or computer.
Right. As long as it is, I just don't want to limit it.
I think filing would be, as long as it was filed, it would be retrieved. I think you said
okay, all right.
Is signed complaint available? Peg was wanted to make sure she could face her accuser.
Well,
I see.
This raises an interesting point. This is the DA's like to have signed complaints on because it gets them off the hook. And you'll frequently hear a police officer say, "I have to have signed complaint." That's just not true. They can't.
If he sees it.
Well, he has a warrant, but he didn't. And he can sign complaints. On what he reasonably believes to be a crime. The concern I have here is facing your accuser. I understand that. I support that clearly. But truly, the accuser in a criminal matter generally is the state. Mm-hmm. So one has the burden. They have a prosecuting witness. But there's no guarantee to face your prosecuting witness. In other words, the anonymous phone chats are frequently used.
apparently right now you can make an anonymous complaint to the Elections Division, and they will accept them.
I kind of think that the responsibility has to be on this guy, too. I mean, it's one year. I think it's a two-way street. Just to phone, or anything else. I think that it's fair to ask the guy.
I don't buy the argument facing your accuser, because if you violated the state's really the one that's going to thump you, and not the individual citizens. I think probably what this will do, and I don't think I'll support it on this reason, rather than the generally accepted one, and that is this will winnow out the crank calls that they'll have to investigate, and that'll give the authorities saying, well, that's a very important problem, it sounds good, come down, sign the report or the complaint, and we'll get started on it right away. And this will have a tendency perhaps to winnow out the less serious or the crank calls. So I think maybe on that reason.
Okay, on page, on the last page, in section 14, they struck the misdemeanor and made it a violation. Okay.
The violation. The fine.
That's a $250 fine for an individual as opposed to a misdemeanor. My note 18 of the severability clause was taken out.
I thought we agreed to take that out of ours.
No, somehow it got through. It went through.
Which one though?
That would be that note 18 there in the margin. That was the severability clause. It was.
Well, we should have taken it out.
I thought we did.
That's it went through. Advantage of unconstitutionality. Because the law already says that. Any part can stay
in
or stay.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll
take that one out.
Okay. No. It's already out. Going back to the part, you want me to reinsert the original language about the employment of a member of the family, I presume?
Well, let's talk about that.
I went over that last night, and I came to the conclusion that you can. It depends on how you look at it, and you're better off with federal language.
If you were saying a contract, the point is this: if in the exception, if we're talking about taking something out, which we are, it ought to be very narrow. If we're talking about including more people, that's something else. But right now, they've got a whole list of people that don't come in under the conflict of interest.
Right.
So what they're saying is the conflict of interest means that
only more than one homeless week.
Right.
That's what they're saying. And it should be said in the positive rather than the double negative that they've got there.
Oh, I have to go. It's that time.
Before Mr. Carson escaped, Senator Ripple wanted to add one on page 4, make a new, where you've got a new paragraph U under State Water Resource Board, put State Board of Higher Education and Tenured Faculty.
You think it over a little bit. But if we've got any real conflict of interest, we've got genuinely here.
How many tenured faculty are there, John?
Oh, about 4,000 or 5,000.
Oh, well, that's about like 35,000 public and local employees.
Oh, I hate to agree with you, Mr. Chairman, but
Thank you. connection with the state system of higher education. Just a couple quick points. Conflict of interest is covered by the administrative rules of the State Board of Higher Education in three different sections. These sections deal with outside employment of all people employed by the State Department. They deal with contracts, and they deal with the hiring of relatives. Secondly, although with this added language of over $25,000 a year, this point may not be valid, but there's really should be no difference between tenured faculty and untenured faculty if you're considering conflict of interest. You could have two associate professors, one with tenure and one without, and it wouldn't make any difference whether they could be in conflict of interest. Yeah. The third point is, I think this is, if you include the State Board of Higher Education in this, I think this is the language beginning with, well, after the comma, is really redundant, because on page 8, when I get to it, section 6 at the bottom says any employee of any board, agency, or commission listed in subsection 10. And that would include all faculty and staff of the state system of higher education. I'd like to turn for a minute to including the State Board of Higher Education. As I understand it, originally all state boards were included in this act, and now it's gone to designating certain boards. It's certainly up to you whether you include our board. But I frankly, and this is a personal position with me, I get a little uptight when the State Board of Higher Education is always singled out and the other education boards are not dealt with. I can see that there would be as great a potential for conflict of interest with the Board of Education, with the Educational Coordinating Council, which has the responsibility of determining where a great deal of federal funds go, with community colleges. You've included local countywide officials, but community college boards have every bit as great a potential for conflict of interest in the awarding of construction contracts, etc., as our board, as do school districts. And I wonder why the State Board of Higher Education is the single educational board in the state that is going to be covered by this act. That's the extent of my testimony. I have a copy of the administrative rules available if anyone wants to look at them.
Well, I don't favor the provision that's in here, but we need another return to do that in. On the other hand, how do you feel about some of these suggestions?
Well, I think they all ought to be put in. I think he's right. Should be. That's what we're at. Find out what all the conflicts are. Nobody really likes it to put all this stuff down, but that's the whole purpose of the bill. And I think perhaps we should.
That if you are going to include our board along with other boards, that then you delete that language referring to the salary over $25,000, because it is covered back on page 8.
Leave that qualification, page 8, subsection 6, section 10, say, any employer that employed a distribution is in subsection 10. If you didn't put in a salary over $25,000, you have to pay the cash for.
That's right, but...
Whereas that, in fact, makes your universe smaller.
Well, I concur, but, Mr. Chairman, why include only those employees over $25,000 with the Board of Higher Education?
Let's put it down to the state level. Both of our people in the state level are funding the executive, the head of the executive department. People are in 21, 22,000, 26.
Well, you hit the heads of the departments. Well, no, I take that back. Well, maybe I don't. Doesn't the earlier language include all department and division heads?
Those are division heads.
Department and division heads. No, that wouldn't be, we don't have divisions within, for example, our president wouldn't be included in this language, present language.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Legislative salary, a legislative employee's salary. It's hard for me to see the reason to limit the public.
paying them.
Right. They, it's, it really makes it worthwhile to come down here and be an employee, as compared to being an educator for financially. So you're not speaking to that. You're a, we legislate employees.
I still, Mr. Chairman, one of the questions that I was asked during the session, when this whole issue came up, what my feeling was, is I inquired, and of course, geographically, there's no way that I would be teaching during the session. It's physically impossible, but as a member, I have had responsibilities, but I stand in connection to this. If a staff person is able to handle the classes, do the work, and so on, we should be able to.
I wish you a school teacher. That makes sense. While we're on section, page four, section four, so-called Frank Roberts.
Thank you.
I have no objection to this, if you want to come back and put this in the first and next session, but I'm sorry, I can't find something with this session.
Who's not ready for last year?
Well, I'm not sure of the position on that session. Well, I was working on it, but I think I reported through, the one under the problem generally, last 1971, trouble Democrat, the session last long, Republican, the same thing. I don't think we ought, I don't believe we should do this, frankly, and I'd like to see it stay in. On the other hand, it was going to cost us the bill. And I think it could be clear to see the prospect of it, I don't know anybody holding the fund, I don't know anybody has the time to hold another, not us, it seems to me that, I don't think this is, well, I mean, it speaks to everybody, I don't, there's only one party that's got it this year. Range on everybody, frankly, I think the provision is going to kill the bill. It used quite a bit to some, several people, both Republican and Democrat, in this house, or this department, or the Democrats.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see this as particularly, I think it might be, since the Senate Democrats have fundraising units, this, it might be taken as a slap at us at this point, but what all the several parties have done is, my reluctance in supporting, I think their measure comes from the fact that we live in Oregon and not in New York, California, or Illinois, or someplace like that. I think that we are in kind of a position in this state where we have to take the people that feature the speakers or whatever, whatever we can get them. And as long as I've been involved in politics, I've never seen a situation where we could take a Kennedy or a Rockefeller or whoever it happened to be and say, we'd like two or three dates, and sorry, but the session is going, and you can't take me now, just a little bit. And so we'll have to take whatever we can get you. It does seem that when the garden sessions, it's easier to get a prominent speaker and take both parties. And so I think it would work convincing, for the interests of politics in Oregon, we can talk to someone like this, essentially, law out for 5 or 6 months, every 2 years, instead of not taking advantage of a prominent speaker.
That's true, there's another one coming up this weekend, that, the votes are taken over at the House side today, and I'm going to be out on Friday. With Kennedy coming, and probably later on Saturday.
Legislature is involved.
I was going to say,
It's not a primary.
That's not true, it's not a primary legislature.
I don't know, the governor had a big shebang, honor Tom of all day or something, or they went through it after.
Okay, Mark.
But I don't know whether that went in law.
Sure, I don't know, probably. One thing about fundraisers, I think it's probably, I'm sure it's for any fundraisers, from that standpoint, I think the effect they're trying to get at is where, and I think it could be the same whether it's party or individual legislator, as a fundraiser during the session, it's or a misunderstanding of whether that when a legislator or a party goes to a lobbyist, that's what the director's for, and says, I'm having a party, wouldn't you, to raise funds for my next campaign, wouldn't you like to contribute to it? I don't think he has to state all the morals that could happen, all the other things that happen, and there may not be any, but I think potentially for this
understand very great, and I think that, I'm sure everybody will.
Yeah, as far as principle's concerned, I think principle's good, but to uphold the principle rather than just trying to slap somebody, it'd be necessary to broaden this so that if you couldn't, if you were an elected official, you couldn't, no lobbyist could give an elected official any contribution. No elected official could ask any lobbyist for any contribution.
During the session.
I think it was during the session. Hell, if a man can't remember from June until January, he's not legislator anyway. He doesn't have anything to do with whether it's during the session. I suppose the lobbyist might feel more of his arm is lifted if they do. If there's anything pernicious, then it's just as pernicious year round. So, what I would do would be, I would favor an amendment, I guess, that strikes out during any session of legislative assembly. Just get rid of that. A lot of these should make for offering, a lot of these should solicit from our office, and some contribution. And down here, where it says state political party or committee or any member of the legislative assembly, I would say, or any elected state official. Strike out the word member of the legislative assembly and insert any elected state official. I can't see much difference between the possibility of a playmire.
Right, we take out during any session of the legislative assembly. Special session, where we'll be discussing
line in section 6 and the third line, delete the words during any session of legislative session. And in the sixth line, delete the words member of the legislative assembly and insert incumbent of or candidate for any elected state office. Incumbent of or candidate for any elected state office. Well, no lobbyist shall make or offer to make, directly or indirectly, any monetary payment or contribution to any fundraising activity to aid or promote the interest, success, or defeat of any state political party or committee or any incumbent of or candidate for any elective state office. No person shall receive or solicit either directly or indirectly such a payment or contribution from a lobbyist.
Not the longest.
what do you think the House members would do with that kind of provision? I didn't follow this bill on the floor.
After their initial recovery?
This is kind of, I don't think they have any objection, judging from the way they, wasn't, three of them were very adamant about this. And, you know, they didn't, they were considering the session because of the recent events, shall we say. And I don't think they had thought about extending it throughout the year.
But that speaks simply to fundraising activities. That doesn't mean they can't do individual donations.
Monetary or contribution.
To any fundraising activity.
Well, most disposal, I come up to spec and say, how about the campaign funds as my fundraising activity? Well, that's this point.
That's the way it's going to be interpreted.
I think you'd have to really stretch it to consider any contribution not being a fundraising event. You're in fundraising process, whatever you're writing.
So it doesn't necessarily mean a party.
While you're out trying to raise funds to run.
I think this takes back
your own money.
Takes back people.
Well, that essentially all this does is simply that the party is everybody out of business as far as $5,800 like dinner.
Not if you sell to individuals.
Yeah, well, let's face it, how many $5,800 like dinners are you going to have selling to individuals?
Well, and I think that's the point that this is trying to get at. You can get all your drug stores and put $5,800 and it's okay. We don't want it.
Actually, I may have to walk out like the others done it, but ever since I introduced the lobby bill, I can't work for that.
City merger program.
My concern, and I think I misunderstood it, was this would mean individual contributions too. And Mike and the
from a lobbyist.
From a lobbyist.
That's because he wants 7175.
But I don't want money to come from a property.
You sell to the city government. First of all, I think that it would be very devious for the person most anywhere around. What if it gets us out of $100 plate dinners and the
$50 plate in there, so I think it's a great idea. I don't know.
Okay, let's move right on.
Can I?
I'm listening.
Okay. We're going to problem. My view of it is that if you appear for, if you're suing the company, this point was, because you regulated so many businesses, that a fellow lawyer has a business client, he's going to run against the state board agency or commission for every one of his clients that has a business client, and maybe a non-business client's bump into the board agency or commission. And if I disclosing this, you violate the indefinite client. I think the matter can be resolved simply this. I think the intent of that was merely not to disclose the attorney-client relationship, to make it easier so that people didn't have to go through all the work records. I don't think the intent is to disclose that, which is not already public record. I guess that's not if I understand the discussion. So I think that if we put some amendment in there to say, to refer back to those, I don't know whether it comes from the public meeting aspect or that is those very few relationships where the matters are not disclosed in public. I haven't said it for a while, but I don't have a lot of sympathy for his argument that he doesn't, this particular one, represent a major client which has dealings with agencies all over the state.
Why don't you want to, you wanted to get disclosure of not public records?
No, no, that's the one they don't want. I want to make sure that this is limited. For instance, what's the problem?
All civil matters on the public record in which he is public official.
Well, what I'm trying to get at, let's suppose I represent a teacher who is in the quiet period before a school board or state board of education or discipline. And he, the teacher, is asked to be kept quiet. So his friendly local politician would have to be a lawyer that discloses on the public record that I'm representing him against his partner, the property, which he's here to choose. But in his rights and confidentiality. So I think my concern is that I don't read it as broadly as the fellow in my talk, but I do think there is a problem. That all, the only purpose of it is to tuck together that which is already public record in one place. Right. But to go beyond that and get into the attorney's confidential relationship with the client, then I think it would be able to recover that all civil matters of public record.
And it was a public record.
Well, yeah, but then he would apply this.
We have public record.
All systems would be the first law, I think, or attorney, the list of all civil matters of public record to which any public record. Let me ask, could I ask, is that duly violent? You're not, you don't
no, care. It was our understanding in our discussion that when we said civil matters, that they would be public record.
Okay. All right, that just does what's been together. So, you know,
okay.
Who he represents in the sense of public record. All right, everybody in favor of that?
Yes.
Okay, session 9. Page 8, subsections 3, 4, 5, and 6, created by the House, the personal exchange between various different public officials in the language, so that, and, yeah, well, 3 would be the statewide, like, people have either government or like the commission, secretary, statewide.
I don't know if it makes it any better.
Four, five, and the rest of them makes them outlines how they act with their superior to commission. So, 3 that would be get a quick commission. Section 11 remains the same. Section.
Yeah, are we going to get this thing funded or Ed and Jack?
We have a bill down there and a bunch of other parts. Through that, I think we get this out and we've got something to say. this is just the Xerox copy of the joint report because the proposed bill has not been printed.
Page two is basically the same as we were adopted. Amendments don't start.
No, we got to page two on the very front page of this one. I'm sorry, it was picked up.
Okay, I got page three. I'll just say insert this in place. No, I didn't see that.
I moved the House Bill 2529.
On adding the department of all the departments, we decided to, we talked about adding the board, or state board of higher education, and all faculty, and there was suggestion that you might rather than go just back to all state people in the south.
And they felt that they should not be selected, and that we would add the Department of Education Coordinating Council, and colleges. I don't see anything wrong with that. Add those, all of those education departments. Now, anybody?
Well, why don't we take on my question, Dan?
All right, invite a question.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Board of Education. Here's the way I write that. State Boards of Education and Higher Education.
Can I have a less than check,
Okay. State Board of Education. The Education Coordinating Council. The State Board of Higher Education. Each community college board, or a community college board, combined with the four system members of the consultant. ANSC language is with which an associate is a member of, or is, ANSC language is, and the members of the following state board agency, members of a community college board. So the word would be a community college board.
All we have to think about faculty, or you,
these are the people who are going to have conflicts. Well, I don't know the amount of salary that you depend on the state of Oregon, the direct proportion on influence upon how much conflict there is. I think that does hold true on some key positions. But I'm not sure that the salary is real as much.
Well, back here we had a department of issues.
That's state department division, and that's not department of political science there. The third line, Mr. Chairman, is that when your salary for state is in the ionosphere, the potential for having additional income well beyond that which the state of Oregon seeks to receive before represents potential conflict with a job in the state of state.
I think that some of the people we're talking about, this is true.
Well, I think one of the things might go, I'm worried about how many people we include on that. I was wondering, could we go to 25 or 30 thousand? What's the governor? Plus, what's he going to mean by it? Is he going to give a radio session? What I'm thinking about is I couldn't probably have direct interest in anyone who may want the job to be ready for the head of the executive branch. Resident Assembly advised that to preserve and maintain the integrity of the process, have a specific issue. We have not seen this.
Legislation?
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to key legislation. If we have no other change, we'll let it go, but if you make a term, I'd suggest we use such word as legislative activity. Because I think we're really run into a dramatic problem. We call legislation, and then move into a variety of things. I don't know how testimony could be legislation, just simply not legislation.
Legislation activity?
Yeah. Legislative activity. My point is, lawyer Eames has got me for it, but I think it's subjective. Well, it was, I don't know if that's necessarily sent back. If we have any associate members that are... And if the corresponding changes for me, if that's available.
When I talked to the lobby, I think I had a couple of things that they were unhappy with. So, and I think that the common cause and the lobby got together pretty much on both. And they were, everybody was able to live with, except for a couple of things that have been related to me from the lobby. One was on page four, and some of them felt that the liability of each fund was, they would have a little problem or they use credit cards or stuff, and they would have a little problem adjusting the books. But I'm not, whatever they want, they wanted a little longer, like every 2 months or something like that, so they have more time to get their books, to get their stuff in. Always been so far behind. The other thing that they felt that,
Mr. Chairman, how about there, putting every 60 days, so what, 50 days or...
Chairman, can somebody allow me again to be arguing? Well, I guess it's quarterly, but it seems to me that once this is set up, that I don't know how the argument follows, but the problem is he's going to have to report on the 15th of April, 15th, or 15th of March, 15th of June, 15th of September, or whatever during the session. How we could argue that anything other than getting more paper. Seems to me that if I know when the lobby is, I'm going to have to report the 15th of March, things I spent in January and February, and I'm going to be this concerned. But you're not hung up on the, I realize the rapid reporting. You don't want to be reporting after the session is over. But, holy cow, the monthly reporting, do we lose anything as far as reasonably, as far as going to a quarterly reporting? You think we do?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you'd have only one report at the end. Towards the end of the first session.
You had two reports this session.
No, just about,
Well, I'm thinking of March 15th, June 15th.
You're making it very difficult for just the two or three people that are working for maybe a very small organization. Because particularly now, supposing someone had to get a report out the 15th of June, and you've got a million bills that you're worrying about in the legislature, you're trying to get that done, maybe you don't have secretarial help, but there are a lot of small lobbies down here. How would you people...
Obviously not going to have that.
Well, that would be expenses. Would you people be prepared every month to, I'll say a voluntary thing to make...
Well, we would
secretarial staff and all those kind of things, not many lobbies to attend.
Well, don't you keep track of things as you're going along for one?
But you still, you're talking about forms, you're talking about state forms.
Right. Our original expectation of the policy advisory board was weekly, which was.
I suppose we would be thankful what they.
Well, it is weekly in some of those areas.
Well, you know, really, for your sake, the more there are, the least you're going to know. Accumulating report showing you a heck of a lot more than a data report.
Well, it isn't only for common cause, of course, it would be for anyone.
Yeah, it's only going to be a few people like such as you that might be interested.
Or the legislators.
Lately, legislators don't have time.
Yeah, tell me what is public interest being served other than making the report? By exposing, let's suppose, instead of doing it on the 15th of January, 15th of February, and 15th of March, we have one on the 15th of February. Now, what interaction, where is the public better served to find out what I'm spending the 15th? Assuming I'm going to give you an accurate, honest report, what's the difference between the 15th of February and the 15th of March? What action, what do you anticipate finding in there that will affect legislation? What I'm getting at is, if the lobbyist knows he's going to have to report it, is he going to be as wise and as frugal or non-wise and non-frugal on a 90-day basis as he would be on a monthly basis? Where do you go once you've found the lobbyist on the 15th of February doing something you think successfully that you couldn't do if you found him on the 15th of March?
First, there were two things that came into this, and I'm not sure I can answer specifically. I haven't sat down to figure that out. But we did have a very important thing in there at one time, and that was the recording of bill numbers and the activity that they conducted on bills, which would make it very difficult. You would want to know what was going on with those bills. That was not acceptable. That is one of our compromises.
You understand that, Kate?
Right. That's one of our compromises. I don't know. There were very strong feelings expressed that monthly was minimal.
Well, I just, when I grade the ball, I can't see if as long as you have to file, it's kind of like an income tax report. You don't have to file your income taxes every month. But you know that once a year, most people do, and if they don't, they're in prison. That once a year, you're going to have to file some income tax reports. And the truth all comes out. And the same thing, I think, with this, whether a lobbyist files monthly, and, you know, it's my only hang-up. I think it's working against the interests of this small person simply does not have the time when they're trying to shepherd their bills through the legislature to you know, worry about this.
Well, I think the importance of the information would be similar to the importance of information on how much money you spend in your campaign. It doesn't do much good after the campaign's over.
Okay. Now, if that's the point you're getting at, I would agree with you. In fact, if we could do it somehow, it'd probably be best, although I don't think there's a problem, because I don't think there's more money spent on lobbying during the closing days, because nobody has time to go out and eat anyway.
Right.
So I don't think it's being spent then. But from a public standpoint, I think the public would be more interested in seeing the last 2 weeks. The problem is nobody knows, I don't know whether we're in the last 2 weeks yet or not, so that's the problem.
Well,
but I agree 100% with you that the public wants to know, but I don't think the public is disturbed by doing it on a quarterly basis. So they're still going to know, and if they find out on March 15th or June 15th or September 15th, I don't think it's going to. For instance, we have a pre-campaign report, a pre-election,
right.
But we don't require every 15 days the candidate to make the report. That's for everything.
Merely as a matter of curiosity, I'm just asking this question. Can you tell me what various candidates spent on the last election?
Having been busy myself down here, I don't have the figures.
That's just
all right. That's what we're trying to show. We go to an awful lot of
that person's involved from March of last year round straight through November.
Newspaper, the whole paper put it in the final week, mentioned it, and I thought, what would hear a lot? Not one person made any response to it. Except the Secretary of State, right, didn't say that you were immensely in there, or that he had been in there.
Well, we have been down there.
But never, not a word.
I assure you.
That's what I'm trying to say, is that I don't think it's quite that important. They're more interested in you.
Spends more, but it's
this list on any one occasion for more than one, for any one official.
Well, I think we have two things there, at least that's my understanding. Yeah. The final statement there is whether it's spent on an individual person. But originally, the individual expenditure above was just an itemization of any expenditure. Yeah, if an occasion arose, as you stated.
I would, let's see what the definition would be. Spend the bylaw is the purpose of lobbying in the preceding month. If I was a good lobbyist, I'd spend more than $25 a month on gasoline for the purpose of lobbying. How do I have to itemize each time I bought gas?
No, you'd say gasoline, $150.
No, that's not what it says. If it's more than $25, it was, it's $150, it shall be itemized. Complying with this law requires itemization. Or mean itemization, then requires itemization. If you mean a list of all expenses more than 25, then let's just say that.
That's what we thought we had agreed upon.
So you think there were two things to be listed. One was any expense per month more than $25. And the other was any expense on one occasion or any one legislator.
Right.
You thought there were two separate things.
Right.
Well, that's back to the category change. Maybe it is, but it's close to it.
Well, do you really think that you want to fill out a statement with every gallon of gas you buy and just one?
No, yeah,
she said she didn't mean to do that. I said this language.
Our original language read, all amounts received or expended directly or indirectly for lobbying activities, including the registrant's total expenditures and a breakdown of such expenditures into the following categories, cost for research, production, distribution of the publication, printing, media, etc. That was deleted, and they inserted instead all expenditures in excess of $25 shall be itemized.
Well, what you really mean is any expense in excess of $25 shall be listed.
Right.
My problem was in my office. If I'm going to Xerox or make copies or my telephone bill, I'm going to have to keep track any telephone call I made to know that it's connected with the legislature. And we've got three people in the office. What I'm saying, I think in effect, is that in a case like AOI, where they may have five different people that are down here, how are they going to keep track of the legislative calls they make? Or
I don't know whether this will make it happen, but I can suggest a change in language. We'll do what they want to do without cracking you as bad as you want. If we said any single expense in excess of $25 shall be listed, any single expense in excess of $25 shall be listed.
The telephone call over $25 would be.
Yeah, if that
would
be able to separate
those out.
If anyone.
What we're talking about is a single event, a single occasion.
Yeah, but I said this.
We're talking about a monthly period, is that right?
Yeah. And the legislative history of the bill will show that it once had categories and it no longer has any categories. And that will give clear meaning to the words any single expense. It doesn't say any single type of expense. It says one payment of one expense for one transaction for $125 home call in Washington, D.C.
So you have three categories, your total amount spent. Then you have any time you spend on one transaction, one event, a phone call, dinner, a telegram, well, anything that costs more than $25 is directed to our lobby to pick up. And then any time you spend more than $25 on an occasion for a lobby, or for a legislator.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for a pause. In preparing this bill, if the people are prepared, did they know the lobby? Did they know anything about the lobby?
Well, David Perlmeyer was our...
Who's he?
David Perlmeyer teaches law in Eugene.
Does he know anything about the legislature or the lobby?
He worked for Nixon, the special counsel.
Did he know anything about the great legislators?
No, quit trying to prejudice.
Does he know anything about the Oregon law?
Yes, he does.
Okay, the question, does he know anything about the Oregon lobby?
He probably did in January.
The question that I have on this, you remember way back, it seems like 50 years ago, when we were considering, I think, our first night on the open meetings bill, one of the things I said when I presented the bills to the committee was, we were presenting a skeleton that I thought we had moratorium tonight. The committee's determination at that point that we should write a bill that was designed for moratorium. And I think we've done that in each case, conflict of interest, the open meetings, public records, and so on. All these bills have been designed for Oregon. I do not think this bill is designed for Oregon. As I look at it, Blanche, I think that it's a bill that just misses the mark. I think it's a terrible bill. As it's written, I really do. I know what you're talking about. I think it's worried about nickel and dime, which worries about a lot of laws.
You can't worry about any more now until you start with nickels.
No, but we're cracking the whip. It's something that I don't know. It's not Oregon.
Well, we have no information in Oregon.
That's why I say
we do have lobbying going on.
We do, but I'm not sure it addresses itself to the type of Oregon lobby that we have. I wonder, the way I read the bill, it sounds like I've heard some pretty far out things about Washington and about California. Some really bad things.
Well, their bills are considerably way further, stronger than ours.
Well, my understanding about Washington and California is that they should be. But, they really have problems. But I just don't see the right copy in this.
I move that on page 4, line 7, we delete the words all expenditures and insert in their place the words any single expense. And that we delete on line 7 and 8 the word itemized and insert, therefore, the word listed.
Okay, we appreciate any objection. Now that I understand it, I didn't state it very well the first time. I'm rereading the 15th of the month or quarterly or whatever you agree upon. There'd be a filing of the total amount spent, just the one sum. That anytime you spend more than $25,
that's a single expense.
A single expense, that would be listed. And either for spent on a particular club study employee, in addition to that listing, would also be on a that's what you read?
Yes.
That's good.
Now, down on 6, the only other place to listen. Any person who was allowed to preserve shall file the secretary of state by January 15th each year, state insurance voting on all ones who spend the law of activity, whatever they have. And they would like to have in there, right after monies, other than salaries.
That's page 4, line 26 of the engrossed bill. After the word monies, insert the word other than salaries. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Mr. Blumenau was especially interested in having salaries in there, and I listened to part of that discussion set in the House Committee at that time. I'm not convinced that there's a need to have a listing of salvage. I mentioned the case of Pete Snedeker, but I guess he's not here anymore. Pete was paid year round, and he wasn't really able to say what part of the salary was for lobbying, as it would be defined under this bill, and what was for the other public relations work for former General Electric. And I don't think his boss could say either.
So I wasn't like to take the thousands like people want to post me like that. Oh yeah. How would you separate the damages? Because he works all the time.
Right. Are you? Yeah. I was
regularly employed finance vice president for legislative liaison, and Joe Dobbs, who was hired for 6 months. Can I make a distinction and report that Joe Dobbs hired for 6 months and leave the legislative directors of all these associations alone? Can we close the gap that you're talking about?
We have some
work on a flat fee. So I'll represent you for $5,000. They have three or four. There is a loophole, I think, that we ought to talk to, and that is there is a higher salary and then not charging back the expenses, but we're not tied together, so I think that point is good.
Mr. Chairman, we kind of wonder whether Section 6 is necessary, because if we have a reporting system where the lobbyists, or the people who are dealing directly with the legislature, are required to report, then you ask an employer to also report, then the question is exactly what does he report? For example, we have a number of categories. We have salaried individuals where there's almost an impossibility to separate the lobbying activities from their regular duties. We have people who are hired maybe to come down for a period of time on one bill. There possibly are people like me who we charge a legal fee for representation of an individual, part of which may be involved with lobbying, but I don't believe that I could publish what we charge our clients in the newspaper. And there's no good way to separate it. So what the employer has to report would be repetitive, really, of what the lobbyist is required to report. And we feel that it's unnecessary, and it would create a very difficult burden to try to separate those things.
I simply would like to state that Section 6 was a compromise virtually agreed to by Common Cause, because when we had asked for a breakdown of costs into expenses and that were the amounts of salaries and so forth, we were told that this was almost an impossibility, and besides, they didn't want to divulge the specific amount for salaries. It would be work a hardship on them. So we thought, in order to get at the total picture and the amount of lobbying money that is spent, and we would just have the employer lump it all together at the end of the year and put it in without designating salaries or this and that and the other thing. No one would really know. Also, that it was not going to be that difficult to prorate the amount of time that you spent at the legislature and be able to figure out your salary.
I'm going to argue the other side. That's naive lobbying. Dave Farrell says his best work between sessions. The reason that he's so effective in sessions is that he's lobbying in between the sessions. Every time he comes to Eugene, he asks him for breakfast. I don't go at the time, but every time he's there, he does. And he asks somebody else for lunch. As far as I'm concerned, there's two policy questions. One, whether we leave Section 6 in at all. Second one is whether, if we leave Section 6 in to include salaries, I think we can solve the problem that Wally talked about by adding another word to my proposed amendment so that we read other than annual salaries. I'm in favor of leaving Section 6 in, but I'm also in favor of amending it so that you just leave out annual salaries.
What you're saying is that it's not requiring any disclosure as to what the vice president gets paid.
And what the other guys are saying is they don't know how they can say which part's lobbying and which part isn't.
Okay, well, wouldn't you have that? sitting down and writing a bill or correcting a bill and coming up here and trying to get the bill passed and testifying as a behalf. Well, maybe there isn't any other problem.
And as far as the Red Herring, he used to get there, not Red Herring, Red, what was Red's name?
Red Hill.
Yeah, and their firm had $100,000 worth of legal fees for the gas companies all together. And I suppose that took care of everything. I don't know that they had itemized it by legislative representation or anything. Well, I would move that we leave Section 6 in, and I would move to leave Section 6 in.
Other than annual salaries.
I'm going to make that motion
The only thing that I'd like to say is I think that what's going to happen in most instances, the employers, and in a lot of these cases that Dick is talking about, really, they pay a fee to Dick. They don't know how much of that's going to be used as legislative at the time. How are they going to make that determination?
Wouldn't you know, though, whether you're hiring for legislative activity or if you're going to the city council, you know that, you know.
Well,
one of the problems is this. The definition of lobbying is a pretty narrow definition in here. Relates to direct communication. Would not involve any number of things that a person who is working with the legislature does, reporting to his employer, all kinds of things, research, going through the bills and everything like that, which may take 9/10 of your time. Then how are you going to separate out a legal fee that involves, now for example, I don't mind saying that I don't get paid just for legislative sessions. The people I represent are clients of mine year round. I think we run into kind of an ethical problem if we were to publish any of our fees we charge our clients in some kind of a public record. I don't think we'd have these clients very long.
Well, she said that this is a compromise. You guys never agreed to it?
Well, that's right. What we felt is this, that the income of lobbyists is neither relevant nor necessary, because that is
the only way you get the income of lobbyists is to hire one guy and all he does is lobby. That's the only way you can raise the income
that's
of lobbyists.
That's right.
If you do those other things, which you do, and if the employer does other things than hire you, which chances are they do, like in-house research or letters or whatever, there's no direct relationship between what the employer spends and what you earn. So. I can't say anything about that. Do you see my point?
I see the point.
That your, let's say, Ajax real estate company hires you as their lobbyist. You report what you spent up under Section 5, as you point out. But you may be lobbying for only Ajax or maybe 10 others, but you're reporting in what the function is. They will report the total cost in the lobbies, which may include all or part of your fee or other things, and they're not directly related. In other words, they just don't take the hours that you charge necessarily. They'll have to figure out, as you point out, how much of that went into lobbying and how much of it went into representing them on a zone change or whatever else you do for them.
What it amounts to is an extremely inaccurate basis to arrive at some kind of a judgment decision in each case, which fall, and there's civil penalties here involved for whatever degree of inaccuracy there might be, depending on somebody else's point of view. We just don't think that the Capital Club as a whole feels that this is unnecessary and that the income of lobbyists is irrelevant to the process. Expenditure, what goes out right into the legislative process might be.
All right, but I think if you look at it another way, expenditure by the individual lobbyist, as we all agree, is important in Section 5, and expenditure by an employer, not individual lobbyists, I would agree with you, I don't think that's relevant, but expenditure by an employer, that is the organization for whom the lobbyist lobbies. Is that not also
important? you're thinking of an instance where an employer engages in all kinds of activities other than through the people the employer represents.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that, they may, I don't know of many instances in that category.
Well, that's supposed to be actually realty, reports 9,500 spent on money. And you can reach a lot of conclusions from that. They can reach, because you're their lawyer, you can charge them 9,500 in big legal fees. But they don't know how many hours, and they don't know what it was done for bribe and other.
Yeah, but he may not report that he spent 9,500 lobbying for those people.
Well, he doesn't have to.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't see what they're going to gain from it.
But say if I report 1,000 and they report 9,500, here is a disparity that somebody's going to say, well, Secretary of State's got to investigate this. There's something wrong.
You might have hired another lobbyist.
The thing that I think comes down was, how do you get somebody from New York?
I would hope to debate it, but I do want to change my mind. I'm going to be close to it. How many would be in favor of saying acrimonies other than annual salaries extended?
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the concerns there is all we're doing is changing how they're going to hire the lobbyists to put them on an annual basis. Would that not?
Well, I don't care whether I know how much the guy is paid for the work or his work. Mr. Chairman, I just don't see as that makes any difference at all.
You mean salaries?
Yeah, I just
don't see. Okay, if it does, let's leave it the way it is and move on. I mean, leave 6 in the way it is and move on.
Or other than annual salaries and full-time employees.
Alright.
Put that in.
Other than annual salaries and full-time employees.
That's, I think that's going to frustrate both sides, I think.
Yes, well, we'll leave it out. Leave 6 the way it is. Go ahead.
That's the only place we've got contention. The other one is the quarterly and second
five. Let's vote on that.
How many are for changing the reporting to quarterly? Because it's quarterly everywhere else. How many are in favor of that? That would be the second five. Part one. I'm voting for one. Two. Yeah. Okay. Or that makes it consistent all the way through that new file, quarterly all the year round.
I move that gross house bill 2530 is amended. You said there's another.
That's the only.
Are those the two problems we have? 5, 6, the only two problems we're disagreeing with?
I believe so.
There's another ambiguity in the bill.
Including the cost of personal travel, telephone, and lodging is one of the ones it doesn't apply to, and yet
We notice in the next section four, within 3 working days after engaging in lobbying, each lobbyist shall register with the Secretary of State by filing with him a statement containing the following information. It looks to us like we're saying if a person doesn't spend $50, he's not covered, but as soon as he spends $50, he's covered under the bill, but he would be lobbying up until the time he spends the $50, so we're...
That was to take care of your grassroots lobbying or your individual...
Yeah, that's right.
Well, why not go in section five of subsection five? I don't see there isn't why an unpaid lobbyist shouldn't register as a lobbyist.
Well, they weren't thinking necessarily of unpaid lobbyists, they were thinking of individuals who may want to come down and exercise the right to talk to their senator or representative, otherwise you're going to have every person that's down here having to register as a lobbyist.
They're going to need the money.
Mr. Chairman, there is one thing, and we're not talking now about the individual citizen who comes to see his legislator, but there are so many groups, you know, 50, 60 people in a group that just swarm in, and I'd like to have some information of who they represent, what they're doing, and so on.
Well, that would have to be in here if the organization spent the money, if the individual spent the money.
Yeah, I wonder if there's, have you given any thought to this? There are several groups that I'm acquainted with that have come here that really have tremendous conflicts of interest. There is, say, on the environment, whatever it happens to be, there might be anti-environment, pro-environment, whatever. And they're here, they're lobbying, they're here day after day after day. And I don't know if there's any way to, like I say, break this up from the individual who comes to see his legislator.
That was the intention, of course, to protect those and try to cause as little people so that people could come down. But not every person came down to the legislature.
Yeah, I don't think anybody that just walks in should have.
Yeah, well, that was what they were trying to get out of real listing.
But I'd say organized groups that are here, you know.
You tried that.
Well, the organized group, of course, if you have them, they're going to, if they charter the bus, and then immediately they're spending money.
Well, I don't mean for just a day, Blanche. We had the substitute teachers and ways of being the other day, and you know, they were here for 2 days.
Fred, honestly, the position, the thing is taken care of because of the definition of lobbyist, which requires him to be a regular lobbyist, whether he's paid or not, or else a person who is paid to lobby. I don't think the subsection 5 adds anything at all. Well, I would be much more inclined to just delete the whole subsection because the definition of lobbyist catches who you're talking about. Individuals. Former CD Renner would be, whether she's paid or not, she is paid.
Alright, you will be then advised to take out.
On page 3, lines 17, 18, 19, and 20, be deleted.
That's all for the process.
What's the quarter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anybody who will lose? That does present the motion for us. Wait, I don't know what we can do. Can we do without on consideration, one picture bill?
Yeah.
Has it had not been voted out by the House?
Yes.
What has?
Well, I don't like to be a little bit.
I know, I think we've been over there. All we need to do
is. All right,
yeah. As soon as they put it up, it's going to be.